Hello and welcome to Making Sense Live. We're going to work out everything that just landed from the budget so that you understand how to make the most of your money. Because always, knowledge is power. No matter what's happened, no matter how you're feeling about it, you can take this time to learn a little bit more about what's going on and make a plan. Once you know what's going on, you can move. First of all, wherever you're listening, whether you're listening live, hello, welcome, or if you're listening to a replay, do hit subscribe so that you never miss a trick with your money. We do have fabulous experts who lend us their time. You do not want to miss out on this or any of the future episodes with them. Our panel is stacked tonight. I'm super excited to talk to them. We, of course, have Hannah McQueen, who will hopefully be back soon. She's the founder of Enable Me. She gives you the straight truth about your money. Now, Aaron Klee as well, General Manager Investment Management at AMP. He knows the investment world inside out. And you've loved his previous episodes. So, of course, we always bring back our fan favorites. Last but never least, Ron Montgomery, portfolio manager at BlackRock, also big on the investment world, able to give us that international perspective, which is so important. So thank you to all of you for coming tonight, giving us the inside word. It is just exciting to be able to rip into this with people who are just fully on top of their game here. Now, don't forget, wherever you're watching, listening, if you're in the live session, you can drop your questions in. That's why we're live, so that your burning questions can be answered. So whatever's on your mind after today's developments, or even if we talk about something that doesn't quite make sense, you want a bit more, you want a bit more depth, sound off in the comments. Let's talk about it. Make the most of being live. Now, look, a couple of the big top line changes from my point of view on this. If you've been following me on socials, you already know my big takeaway is the big change to KiwiSaver. They're halving the government contribution from $521 a year to $260, and they're going to means test it. So you don't get anything if you earn over $180,000. It's not entirely bad, though. The default rate also going up from 3% to 4%, and that includes the employer match. So that could be good. And 16 and 17-year-olds now also getting some of the perks. I did also perk my ear up at businesses getting a bit of a tax change. That lets them deduct more on top of the normal depreciation. Plain language version there is a lower tax bill for certain businesses that buy equipment. Government saying they're using that to boost business investment. That's really been a focus in all sorts of ways in this budget. So interesting things going on here. Let's get to our experts, because I'm more interested in what they think than what I think. Let's start with Aaron. Let's chat to you first. What do you think? After seeing what's been announced in the budget today, does the average person in New Zealand have more money at the end of the week? Why not?
I guess it's, as with any budget, depending on your situation, but the announcement of the targeted cost of living support through the increase in working to families, the thresholds and rates is positive. So that's an extra $14 a fortnight on average to about 142,000 families that are earning less than $100,000 a year. So some good support there for the lower income earners. And I think the other one that stood out to me was the super annuitants, the rebate, the rates rebates. For those on the Super Gold Card to be slightly expanded to provide more support to, I think it's up to 66,000 more retirees. That rate's been lifted to just over $800, $805 for super annuitants to offset some of their rates. Those couple of things, but as probably expected, there wasn't a huge amount of lollies being thrown around, and that was largely what was expected going into the budget, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue with this one, is it is tough times, it is tight times, and I think a lot of people expected the government to respond accordingly. We weren't expecting heaps. I wasn't expecting all of the cuts we got. I'm going to harp on about KiwiSaver until I'm blue in the face, but there we are. What about you, Rom? How do you see this shaking out for the average person? More money in the back pocket or not?
Well, I think hard to say in the sort of near term, but I think some of the measures around the longer term and trying to increase the sort of, you know, overall productivity growth of the economy was pretty sensible. Sensible from a couple of points, you know, in terms of, you know, what it means for individuals, is it should mean higher real wages, which is something I think everyone welcomes, and should be good in terms of sort of stabilizing, you know, some of those sort of debt dynamics of the government itself, which ultimately is good for everyone else anyway, because it means a lower interest bill for the government, which, you know, hopefully means a slightly lower taxation for everyone over time.
Yeah. I do think your point there about the incomes is a huge one. We've been battling low incomes in New Zealand for a long time, and it's something that's constantly talked about. Was there a top thing in the budget that you liked? Is there anything that you wish was in there, but it's not, Ron?
Look, I did sort of, you know, come back to the point around the sort of broad goal to stabilize debt, at least in, you know, in the sort of next few years, to stabilize the amount of sort of indebtedness of the government, and then look to grow the economy, which will sort of bring down that overall level of debt over time. So rather than, you know, be really sort of punitive on the spending side, the goal should be to grow the overall sort of economy such that the level of debt, you know, we have in a few years' time, as a sort of, you know, denominator effect in terms of the overall size of the pie is bigger, and that sort of debt load is smaller overall and less impactful to sort of, you know, individuals. So I did like that aspect. And I think it's something that, you know, putting the sort of global sort of hat on, I guess, you know, we are seeing the cost of debt rise. If we look at sort of financial markets in the past few days, one of the really sort of captivating things has been the increase in global bond yields. And that all sounds a bit kind of nebulous and sort of far removed from every day. But effectively, it's the cost of borrowing, not only for governments, but that cost flows through to corporates and ultimately individuals as well. And I think if you know, you can do anything that sort of takes measures to address the amount of borrowing that you need to do, because the cost of borrowing is going up, then ultimately that should be a positive thing over the time. It's not the world that we're in a couple of years ago where interest rates were incredibly low, you know, near zero in many economies, and New Zealand was no different. And moreover, there was a lot of purchases of sort of government bonds. So, you know, in other words, interest rates were being sort of suppressed or artificially low. That world is in the rearview mirror now, and we need to sort of make, you know, really proactive steps in order to sort of address that debt that we have, because it's getting more expensive.
Yeah. And Hannah, thank you so much for sticking with us. Of course, having a couple of connectivity issues, I really want to get your thoughts because I really value them. What did you see in this budget? What did you see that you thought was good and you were pleased? And was there anything that you looked at it and you wished something was there that wasn't?
The one change that I thought was a slam dunk was the prescriptions extending out to 12 months. I think everyone wins from that, including GPs who are incredibly overworked, renewing scripts for something that isn't changing for a lot of people, right? So I think that was a clean win. I probably take a slightly dissenting view, Francis, on the KiwiSaver. I don't think it's the government's responsibility to create a savings fund for us. I think we should be responsible for that. Government have a big enough problem trying to pay for care for our elderly that is only increasing, and we're only getting more and more old people. And I'd prefer to keep them to account in the quality of care that they are providing, rather than also commenting or having to prop up Kiwis' pensions. Oh, sorry, their super fund outside of their pensions. I felt that the budget needed to be bolder, and it was a little bit pithy for me. I think, like, conversations that need to be had is that the working age needs to be higher. Pension, being able to access pension, needs to be at an older age, and that's contentious, and I understand all these problems, but someone needs to have a conversation. I think that all they've done is push the cost of KiwiSaver onto the employer, But I like that the threshold of compulsory saving is lifting. I would like to see some of the flexibility they have in Australia, where you can, in effect, manage your own funds and you get access to some of that money to invest instead of it being locked up unless you want to buy your first home, which is possibly the most unproductive financial move you could make. So I'm like, what are we trying to encourage there? I can go deeper, but I don't want to upset the flow.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little more about KiwiSaver, because I have huge respect for your point of view. I mean, that's the whole reason you're here. And I think we do come at KiwiSaver slightly different perspectives on this. So I'd love to talk about it some more, because from my point of view, when I look at the KiwiSaver changes that they've rolled out today, I mean, already there's so few perks for anyone who's self-employed. You don't get the government contribution if you're self-employed. A lot of self-employed people would put enough in to just get the government contribution, and now that's being cut again. We've seen it cut in the past. And I look overseas at other countries where they are ramping up their retirement savings schemes, particularly, I mean, just over the ditch in Australia. They love to steal all our people, and they've got gold-plated super. And I look at the system here, and it feels like they just keep pulling back on the perks of KiwiSaver when we desperately need to encourage people to save. And so I get really bummed out from that point of view. And I'm like, God, we need to convince people to do something. And so many people do only the bare minimum and only when they're really encouraged to. So I get really bummed out. But you, of course, come to it from a different point of view. So talk me through it.
Well, I think that dropping the government's contribution is offset, I would think, almost entirely by a lift in the employer contribution. So I'm not convinced the employee is any worse off. I think I don't know the details of the Australian situation. I feel like they've just pushed a cost onto employers, but I don't think that the employee is disadvantaged. I like that they have stepped up the contributions. I think it's fantastic. If we look at Australia, they obviously put a lot more of their pay packet towards their own superannuation, and that is matched by the employer. So I think you could be getting between 9 to 12% going into a super, which is matched, which is incredible. But Francis, if we instilled that in New Zealand, most Kiwis not even living within their means. So you're going to introduce a higher savings rate, which would be matched by the employer, which should be sufficient to save enough by retirement. But if that means that people are going backwards to do it, it's sort of a false economy, right? So I like these step changes. I feel that they're gradual enough. It's getting pushed onto the employer. So in effect, it's a form of a compulsory pay rise every year, whether that translates to cash in hand or just going into a savings account. I think that's a great thing. And again, I don't think that the government, I get why they introduced the Kickstarter and these tax credits or this kind of free money they put in each year while they get people used to saving for their retirement. But I feel like we are used to it now, and I don't think we need those incentives. I think they can be redistributed somewhere more meaningful myself.
Interesting. Okay. No, it's great. Aaron, I'd love your thoughts on it as well. I mean, when you look at the changes and you look at KiwiSaver overall now, I mean, what do you make of these changes in the first point? And are we being ambitious enough with our KiwiSaver?
I think there's lots of issues of discussion through this. I think the changes to the contribution rates is a good progression, as Hannah said. That will mean that the average person will have more in their savings for retirement, and that'll help them live a retirement lifestyle that they aspire to. So there's a tick for me on that as well. Similarly, I think there's probably two points here, and I think there needs to be a more of a debate and open discussion around, you know, what's the broader strategy for New Zealand around retirement income? And that's, you know, balancing between the government pension, which is really good, and the savings industry and personal savings. So figuring out what's the long-term strategy, because the pension is going to be unsustainable at some point. And the cost to government with, you know, more people entering into retirement, less people, you know, there's already projections around, you know, the tax revenue decreasing in time. And so how are they going to fund the universal pension? I think it's a big question mark. So there needs to be a sort of broader strategy around retirement income and how people are going to live in retirement appropriately. And so the government's got to get their books in balance. That's their job. And I do agree that the, you know, it becomes a personal responsibility might be a bit strong, but to Hannah's point that people need to take account of their own outcomes. You got to remember that a lot of people that are in retirement or in getting close to retirement, they've essentially paid for their pension through their working life and the taxes that they're paid. So, you know, we have a pay-as-you-go pension system, which means that, you know, the retiree incomes through the government super or the pension are funded by taxes from current workers. And that involves high taxes on workers and that, you know, creates some distortions through the market. But the other system is the savings-based system like KiwiSaver, where, you know, people contribute to their own pension or private savings schemes like KiwiSaver, and their contributions directly translate into their retirement outcomes. So somewhere down the track, there's this combination of the two, which will work, and it's getting the balance in that transition as we move from largely a state-funded pension into something different in the future. Increasing the contributions is good. Probably my final point around that, I would have preferred to have seen the $3 billion they've taken out of that put back into the retirement system in some shape or form, because that's, you know, $2.5 billion of the tax credits they've taken away. They're also generating, that's over 4 years, they're also generating another $500 million on taxation on those higher employer contributions. And so there's $3 billion of savings the government's made through the announcements over the next 4 years, which I would have preferred to see come back into the retirement system in some shape or form to, you know, incentivize people to save more themselves.
And I'm just going to jump in. There's a question on YouTube as well saying, have they removed KiwiSaver total remuneration option? Which is, for anyone who hasn't seen that before, that's where your employer contribution, of course, can be 3% currently, will be 4% in the future, where that is basically like a little pay rise, right? But sometimes they will say your KiwiSaver is part of your entire pay, so it kind of comes out of your pay as well. No, that is continuing. So the gross pay option continues, which is a bit of a shame, but there we go.
That needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I would agree with that too, because here's the thing. I don't have a problem when it is something that people sign up to, but it's often a little bit of a sneaky move. It can often be in the fine print. I don't love that for people. So I would love that one addressed too.
If you look in the fine print today in the Treasury report, they say they expect that 80% of that employer contribution will be funded by lower pay rises. That's their forecast, which means that you're paying for your own contribution increase.
Well, that bums me out massively. That's not good. To just, you know, layman's terms, right? That's what I'm here for. It bums me out massively. Speaking of sneaky things, right? Because I just want to address this because I've obviously put out a lot of content about this on social and in the podcasts previously. And something that has come up time and again is, in my comment section, it going nuts with people saying, this is why you can't trust KiwiSaver, because they changed the rules. And I really love overall the KiwiSaver system. I think it's been really great for people in New Zealand learning how to invest and having some of the savings for their retirement. And when I see comments like that, once again, bums me out, because I hate people feeling disempowered about their financial future. And I think that's what really comes through to me when they're saying things like that. When they're saying you can't trust KiwiSaver, when they're saying the rules will just change again, there's no point. I mean, Aaron, what do you think? And I'll come to you about this as well, Hannah. What do you think? Do you think that changing KiwiSaver like this is warranted because we do have to make changes now and then? Or do we run the risk of it becoming a bit of a political football? Do we need to be careful with this?
Now, I do sympathise with the point because it has been tinkered with over the years. But the facts are that KiwiSaver, which started in 2007, is surviving the test of time as a saving system that works. And around the world, it's rated really highly as a model. So KiwiSaver itself is actually a good savings tool. And if you lose faith in KiwiSaver, or you think that's not the right approach, what is the alternative? You know, how are you going to save for your future if you don't use a vehicle like KiwiSaver? It enables you to save into something that's typically really well diversified. It gives you access to the world's capital markets to grow your wealth. And it builds a savings discipline that's very important. Probably to extend on point Hannah made before, it could evolve further into something, you know, akin to what you can do in Australia. But our systems are very different. So it's very hard to compete, to compare, you know, one point to another. But I think it could evolve into, you know, more of a broader savings vehicle where you can invest, you know, more broadly than the funds that are available today. But it's also by and large very cheap. And so it's a cheap way to invest. The fees on it are, you know, the cheapest fees you get around the market for investment. As I said before, the younger people are going to have to think really hard about that question on whether the government is going to pay for their retirement income when they get there. And at some point in everyone's lives, the paychecks end, but the bills don't. So it's imperative to have a good savings to continue a standard of life when you stop working. With KiwiSaver, it's yours. It's in your own name. You are the owner. No one else can touch it. The government can't touch your account. They can change the settings or the incentives, but they can't touch, you know, your own savings. So I think, you know, there's a lot of really positive attributes about KiwiSaver. And just because the government changes some policy settings around incentives from time to time, I don't think that takes away the value that it provides Kiwis.
Yeah. And I actually think that's a really important point to push again, because I do see this a lot with people saying, oh, the government's going to take your money or they're going to spend it on this or that. And yes, the government sets the rules. Yes, the government can change the rules, but they don't have your money. It's private companies, it's banks, it's investment firms that operate within the KiwiSaver system and are accredited for KiwiSaver, and they have your money and it is your money. It's legally yours. If the government took it, they would have confiscated your property. And if you think that's going to happen, you probably also shouldn't buy a house, because that's similar level of, you know, confiscating property. So really important thing to push there. Hannah, your thoughts on changing KiwiSaver, if it erodes trust, how we handle this so that people do have confidence in their retirement savings?
Yeah, well, I think that if we come back to the first principles of KiwiSaver, I don't think they have changed, which is it's a savings for your retirement. It's very hard to access unless you're buying your first home or until retirement. And your employer should be matching your contributions. So those principles haven't changed. That the settings, they can, I guess, play around with those settings. So the government contributions, it wouldn't surprise me if they will go to zero in the next few years. We know that the Kickstarter came and it left. That was cute when it was here. We all tried to jump on that bandwagon, but that was only sort of just a little thing. They might make it harder to access. They might change the age that you could access it. So let's say they did put up retirement age. They might say, well, that's now the age that you can access your KiwiSaver. It might be 66 or 67. But those are really the only settings that the government can play around with. If I think of a lot of my clients, you know, occasionally you get a curveball from life, something unexpected, and that might cause you to start to go backwards. And it's only for a time, but if you didn't have a rainy day fund, you're starting to incur debt, and it can be really difficult to hit the threshold of hardship to access your KiwiSaver. And that's possibly a setting where they need to be a little more in touch with the real world, because it seems preposterous to me that you would use a credit card at 20% debt and just start to snowball when you've got funds that you could access. But again, that's an example of a setting which isn't as favourable as what it could be. But we're only talking about the settings that the government can play around with, tinker with. The actual core funds are yours, and the fundamental principles haven't changed. And I don't think they will. They're baked in.
Really good points there. I see in the comments, is it too late to top up for the current period to receive the $500 top up? No, it is not too late. You can still do that. So definitely, I mean, This is not financial advice. This is all general information, et cetera, et cetera. As always, the usual disclaimer applies, but it is a really good idea to try to get that 1,042 in each year, get that 521 back while you still can. There was something else that someone mentioned in the chat. I'll have a look at that while I get Ron to answer a different question, because there was another question that I wanted to ask Ron about. I mean, certainly I'm seeing other people saying if they're not, well, even if they are using their KiwiSaver, there are beautiful investment opportunities outside of KiwiSaver as well, right? And we talk about this on the podcast all the time. Maximize your KiwiSaver, get the best perks out of it, and then maybe you look elsewhere and you do something under your own steam. So Ron, was there anything that you looked at in this or even in the general economy at the moment? What's looking good for the investment environment? What's not so much? What are you paying attention to in the current money environment through an investment lens?
Yeah, there's obviously always a lot of opportunities. You know, if we think about our sort of philosophy in terms of how we create portfolios, it really kind of hinges on this sort of point of diversification. So, you know, it's a bit of an old sort of cliche, but you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. And by doing so, you're probably not going to have the absolute kind of best, you know, knock it out of the park returns every year. But by the same token, you're not going to have, you know, really weak returns that may sort of lag the sort of returns we might have generally got if you had a more balanced approach. So I think that's really important. If we think about the sort of global setting and sort of taking it up to that level, you know, there's quite a lot of uncertainty out there in the world at the moment, no least because of a lot of the sort of tariff policy that's sort of come about in the last couple of months, particularly driven by the Trump administration. So again, we'd say uncertainty, but that doesn't mean there's no opportunities. But you just have to take a more balanced approach. Think about how you're constructing your portfolio. Don't sort of put all your eggs in one basket, and make sure you know, you're really getting genuine diversification in terms of how you are sort of constructing your investments, whether they're in KiwiSaver entirely, or you've got more of a sort of, you know, total sort of personal approach that you're looking at. You should make sure you're diversified and make sure it's genuine diversification, not just diversification in terms of, you know, I've got a whole bunch of different investments. Those investments potentially could sort of all be leveraging the same type of return drivers. So you want to make sure you're leveraged into different drivers of return that can work in different market environments.
Give me a really quick overview on what genuine diversification looks like to you.
Yeah, so we don't have to talk portfolio specifics, but, you know, within your fixed income allocations, you know, there's a range of options you could have. You could have cash in the bank that's very fixed. You could have a term deposit, obviously. You could be invested in government bonds, but you could also be invested in bonds that are linked to inflation. So, you know, one of the sort of pitfalls of your normal government bond is it pays you a fixed coupon, and regardless of what the inflation rate is, that's the interest that you get. But with inflation-linked bonds, you'll get an index that's linked to inflation. So if inflation goes up over time, you'll get the inflation rate plus another sort of element of interest on top of that. So that's quite appealing, particularly in a world where there is a lot of uncertainty. Some of that uncertainty could lead to, you know, more future inflation. That's something that we're mindful of and we sort of build into portfolios. So there's a sort of spectrum there, even within that very one sort of narrow universe of, you know, what we would describe as fixed income investments, of type of sort of specific type of investments that you can access, which can give you a different return depending on, you know, what part of the economic cycle you're in.
There's a great question here that I'm going to send your way, Hannah. Olivia's saying, I'd love to explore more about recommendations for people to take more responsibility for their own finances and feeling empowered in regards to money rather than guilty, overwhelmed, and confused, which totally agree. We don't want people feeling all of those awful negative things. And I do think when we have a lot of news coverage of the money world, it's easy to focus on the negatives. It is easy to focus on the things that are being changed that you can't control. So if anyone is looking at these changes, particularly maybe they're not feeling great about the KiwiSaver changes, feeling like they're missing out, What do you think would be something they could start to do, Hannah, where they could maybe feel a bit more empowered and a bit more positive about their money situation?
Yeah, well, just picking up on one thing that Ron just said, he said that uncertainty can create opportunity. And I'd probably double down on that, to be honest, Ron. I'd probably say most opportunity lurks within uncertainty. So you've got to be ready to move. And if I look at this budget and we kind of come back to the principles of it, I actually find it empowering myself, this budget, because it sends a very clear signal that there just isn't money to burn. No one's getting a free lunch. No one's dining out on anything. I mean, you might get an extra $14 a week if you're lucky for something. Like it is so pithy. But I like that no one's going to rescue me. I like that. I think that that gives you the, you can take ownership of your situation, which can be scary. So don't confuse uncertainty with not being scared. But what we've got to do is we've just got to take a breather and we forget about everyone else for a second. And we just look at our own household and we work out, okay, well, what does me and my house need to do? And at the very first principles of everything, you've got to live within your means, right? So that's the first thing. And if you can't afford paying and 1% more into KiwiSaver, well, that probably highlights a much bigger problem for you. So we've got to address that. And we've got to work out, okay, well, is it a case of you don't earn enough money, or is it a case of you're spending too much? Or is it a case of your mortgage is too big? Do you have a plan to pay your mortgage off faster? Are you starting to get your equity to work harder for you? What is your investment strategy? We talk about this KiwiSaver pot of money, but most Kiwis don't even review their KiwiSaver each year. You know, we're worried about a $260 drop in contribution, yet they're in a fund that's not even performing, which is costing them more than $260. I think we've got to focus on the things we can control. And there is so much we can control. And if we pan out, KiwiSaver on a good day maybe covers 40, maybe 50% of what you need from retirement. The government currently are trying to fund the other third. It's on you to close the gap with the difference. So what are we going to do that? And most Kiwis' strategy is, I might work a bit longer, and that's okay, or I might downsize my home. But for many of us, we've got to do more than that. And heaven help you if your kids have left school and are at home and now you need to bankroll them for 2 years. I mean, like, that's a pain. I've got a 17-year-old and I'm thinking, oh gosh, imagine if, I mean, of course he has to work. Of course we want to encourage those things. But there are some things that are going to make life harder for some people, without a doubt. But let's focus on what we can control.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree on that front, because there's always things that are out of your control. There are always things that are going to change. And there are always things that are unfair in life, right? I'm not saying that things aren't unfair sometimes. I'm saying, what bits can you control of that? And let's at least take control of those. You're so right about making sure you're in the right KiwiSaver fund. I've talked about this before. I need to go into more depth at some point. But at the very start of my journey in becoming a financial journalist, I was in typical default conservative at that point KiwiSaver fund. And when I looked at just literally changing the setting, just changing it to growth, that was another $200,000 by retirement. And that's wild. So that's, you know, changing the bits that you can change. So very important. I mean, let's change gears a bit, because we've spent a lot of time on KiwiSaver. There were, of course, other things that were very important in there. We saw a lot in terms of even just the pre-budget announcements where they're, you know, giving boost to film and television, the startup funding, the boosting to infrastructure. They've said they want it to be the growth budget. They want to grow the economy. So, Aaron, what do you think when you look at this? Do you think we're going to get the boost to jobs and incomes? Is this going to be what we need to see? Because, I mean, everyone wants to earn more, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's, they've done well with the small amount of opportunity they've got, given the current situation in the economy. And the centerpiece of the budget, I think, is the investment boost, which is the new tax incentive allowing for businesses to deduct 20% of a new asset's value from their income. So that's going to encourage businesses to invest in productive assets like machinery and equipment. And the Treasury estimates this will lift gross domestic product, the whole revenue of the country by 1%. And they also forecast that's going to help lift wages by 1.5% over the next 20 years. So with half those gains in the next 5 years. So that was quite innovative. I don't think anyone saw that coming. So, you know, I think that was a really good, that was a good step in the right direction of getting some growth into the economy and focusing on businesses. And I think the comment was made earlier is around letting businesses do the investment rather than, you know, relying on the state to do the investment. I think that's a positive shift. And then some of the things that the government's doing, which, you know, you'd expect the government to do, to invest into infrastructure and public services. So there's $6.8 billion of new capital investment for hospitals, schools and defence. And so that stimulates short-term economic activity. And because that's jobs, that's building, that's activity. And I think, you know, that also the government managing their own budget and, you know, their own wallet tightly, keeping themselves under that cost constraint. So, and, you know, that's the lowest it's been in a decade. And that's so that they can be responsible with their revenue and expenditure while still investing in growth. So I think there are some good growth initiatives, but be it with not a lot to play with in the first place. It's not like we're in a really strong position with, you know, a lot of money to spend. So I was quite positive on those aspects.
Yeah, I just have one sort of observation, Francis, on that as well, if I may, which was, I think it's great that the government are incentivizing investment for businesses, but a lot of businesses don't have cash just sitting around to make an investment. Like, they are tapped out after the last couple of years, and right, they're also going to be having to pay more towards their employee superannuation fund, right? So I think what would be really nice to see is if the government could create some policies to help businesses borrow money to invest and then get the tax credit from that. You know, it feels like there's just another part of the equation that needs to be considered if we're going to try and maximize how that money could go. Otherwise, the small business owner or even the medium business owner gets left out of that because they don't have the cash to create that investment. So,
which is, of course, the vast majority of New Zealand businesses.
Yes. So it just feels like there needs to be some wording or a tap on the shoulder or a whatever, a little huddle to say, hey, we need to create access to cash for these businesses so they can make that investment to then get that tax credit.
I really like that point. That's a good point. I will say as well, Ron, we were talking earlier about, you know, the tariff situation and how that has played out and the things that happen in the US. It's a huge economy. It absolutely impacts everyone. I've had a lot of comments and people saying, oh, well, what does it matter for New Zealand? Hugely. So one of the things, though, that I think is really interesting is we've seen, especially in investment circles, this sort of losing of trust of Trump's America, because the investment world loves certainty. And I think probably the defining characteristic of the Trump administration is uncertainty. So without putting words in your mouth there, of course, you're very welcome to disagree with me on any point. But what do you think when we're looking at the global environment and how things are shaking up? Do you think we'll start to see people with money looking elsewhere other than America? And could that actually end up working out well if people are looking to invest into places like New Zealand? Could this work out well for us?
Yeah, very possibly. And I think you're right. The first reaction is a more sort of guarded one, but it need not be the case. And it could be that, you know, if there was even a moderate amount of capital that was to leave the US, and bear in mind, the US capital markets are, like you said, Francis, just huge. And they really dwarf, you know, the rest, say. The US equity market is something like 2/3 of the global equity market. It's just massive. And so, to your point, if some of that capital was to be divested from the US and looked for a home elsewhere, the sort of proportionality is quite skewed. And that could actually be quite significant for countries like New Zealand, where the relative size of the capital markets is much smaller. So even a very small amount of you know money to live in the US and coming into New Zealand, for example, could be quite impactful. So that's definitely something we're thinking about. I mean, there's a much broader sort of probably another full hour discussion in terms of the potential for the US exceptionalism kind of thematic to end. But it has been the case, and you know what we've been sort of grappling with, I guess, is that US companies, you know, they are the most profitable companies in the world. And that's what's kind of driven this sort of greater flow into US markets. And I think we need to keep thinking about that and whether that dynamic's likely to change or whether the capital is just sort of leaving the US because of sort of, you know, more sort of uneconomic reasons, if you will. Reasons not relating to a sort of return on their capital, but I guess maybe how their capital's being treated.
What do you think, Aaron, when we're looking at the sort of bigger picture, we step back and we say, okay, what is happening with our money right now and what can we do about it? Do you think there might be more people looking to invest into sort of New Zealand Inc., for that very overused phrase? But what might be happening there? Do you think there might be more opportunities of money coming into New Zealand? What would that mean for the average person, do you think? What would the average person notice?
I think from an investment perspective, as we've talked about on other podcasts, you know, firms, investors, customers don't like surprises, and particularly markets tend to react negatively in situations like what's gone on in America, and all that policy uncertainty from Washington is part of what's eroding the trust. And I think on New Zealand, on the other hand, we tend to be more conservative. And our approach to things like trade and government policy. And I think today's budget was probably a good example of a steady hand. There was no massive surprises. It was as expected. And I think that sends a positive signal for investors looking at New Zealand. So I think when you're investing from New Zealand, you know, we've got the world to think about. And we do. So, you got to think about how much you want to invest into this market and how much you can invest into this market. We don't have a really big market. So there's not a lot of companies listed on stock exchanges. The debt market's fairly narrow. So you're not going to be able to, what do we manage, about $12, $13 billion in total. We couldn't invest all of it in New Zealand. You can only invest so much without sort of owning the market. So you have to diversify globally anyway. But I think New Zealand's, you know, those factors around being, you know, steady, conservative, will have attributes at certain times. One thing we have been thinking about, though, is relative interest rates. And Ron may have a view on this, that, you know, we're in a fairly unusual time when New Zealand's interest rates are lower than America's. That doesn't happen that often, because normally when you see interest rates being higher, that's generally because, you know, there's higher risk. Ron may have a sort of a global perspective on that and what that might mean, but yeah, New Zealand will have some implications from that, or New Zealand investors and New Zealanders will feel some implications from that, I'm sure.
Yeah, Ron, give us a quick overview on the interest rate environment, because it is important. It does impact everything.
Yeah. So I guess there's sort of almost two interest rates. One is the interest rate that, you know, the RBNZ set. That's sort of the overnight rate that affects short-term borrowing. But the vast amount of sort of government borrowing is done longer out the interest rate curve, like they're longer sort of maturing interest rates. And that's where we've seen the bigger changes more recently in global markets. And, you know, that's what I think is going to be sort of more impactful, like the, you know, a 30-year government bond in the US recently just tipped over 5%. That's the highest it's been in a number of years. So that's something to be mindful of. And the fact that New Zealand is, an importer of capital. So we have to compete on the sort of global capital stage. So very unlikely that, you know, we're going to be able to borrow at meaningfully lower rates than, say, the US. So, you see that in global government bond markets where, you know, the New Zealand long-end rates are very similar to what the US is. So I think that was part of the sort of goal in terms of stabilizing overall government debt, because, you know, it is the case that we've got to pay more for borrowing at the moment. And that's probably going to be the case moving forward. And, you know, you don't want a significant proportion of the government budget being used to service your interest costs. You much prefer, obviously, to cycle that back into frontline activity and things that matter for people rather than, paying down your debt effectively or even just the interest on it.
Mm-mm. All right. Well, we're pretty much running up on time here. It's been a brilliant chat. I want to finish by whipping around. I'll start with you, Ron. If there's one thing you want people to take from this budget and maybe one thing that people should consider in terms of looking after their money in light of today's announcements, what do you think that would be?
Yeah, I think listening to Aaron before, demographics are really shaping, policy, and it should shape too what we're doing in our own personal investments. So we're obviously living a lot longer, which is great. It means we need to plan for longer in retirement. And it also means that, governments are sort of, susceptible to changing policy. I think, Aaron said, if you're just starting off in the workforce today, can you really rely on the fact that you can retire in your mid-60s and there'll be a government pension there for the rest of your life? No, you probably need to sort of think about, the circumstances under which that could change. And it all comes back to sort of demographics and longevity risk. And, that in turn, makes you kind of need to be, I think like Anna was pointing out many times, responsible for your own, personal investment wellbeing.
Yeah, 100%. All right, Aaron, your thoughts, your big takeaway, and if there's an action point that you have that relates to it.
Similar. Think less about what the government is doing with its income and expenses. Ignore a lot of things that you hear about today and think about your own personal or family's income and expenses and your strategy for that. That's what you can own and, that's what will help you navigate your own path to financial independence or whatever your aspirations are.
Mm. Love it. All right, Hannah, we'll finish with you and your wisdom as always.
Well, I think a family has to target saving 20% of their income. We said before that, Australia has a lot of money. Well, in effect, they are forced to save or create 20% of their income is getting saved each year. That's what we need to be able to lift to. Now, KiwiSaver is now going to do 8% of that, 4% from you, 4% from the employer. Where are we going to get the difference from? And that's if you aren't saving that, then you've got to get some help to lift that saving. And it can be through optimizing your investments so they perform harder, or it could actually by you accepting that you can't drift towards your retirement. We've got to be proactive and get a plan together. But what I can confirm, because I've been doing this with thousands of clients, is what you have done previously is not an indication of what you are capable of when it comes to your financial future. And I think just as Aaron said, tune out this noise. It has very little impact to most of us, but sit in your power that, okay, let's take a breath and let's address this. Retirement should be for everyone, but we've got to get a plan to make sure you and your household will get there safely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I just think you've all brought some really good perspectives this evening and really appreciate you. I can see, especially you, Aaron, in your darkened office, I really appreciate you guys spending your time to share your wisdom with us this evening. So now, before you go, if this webinar was useful to you, do hit subscribe wherever you're listening so that you never miss a trick with your money. We try to make sure that we are shedding light on these situations, keeping you empowered so that you always know what's coming next. And of course, send it to a friend so that they get the inside word too. But thank you so much to our wonderful panel of experts, Hannah McQueen, Ron Montgomery, Aaron Klee, taking time out of your evenings to be sharing the inside word. Really, really appreciate that. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.